Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. If I'm wondering how I'm doing, I mean, how I'm really doing as your host, sure, I can just ask any one of you and you'll tell me, but for comparison purposes, I can always go to agcanada.com/podcasts or iTunes or Google Play and listen again to the past several weeks of Between the Rows, hosted by all our other great hosts, and get an idea of which episodes I think were the most successful, what made them effective, and where I have room for improvement. Now, in business, though, where you have expenses and overhead and profits and losses to consider, this sort of comparison against peers in the same line of work to find out where you stand and where you can improve is what's known as benchmarking. It's a concept that's being applied more and more in farming, both in large regional groups and in smaller groups where members have much closer contact. Country Guide recently took a closer look at these sorts of peer-to-peer comparisons, and today we're talking about comparisons both between peers and at the larger regional and national level. For that today, we have Terry Betker, CEO of Backswath Management here in Manitoba, on the line today from Denver. Hello, Mr. Betker. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Yep. Happy to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. And we also have Maggie Van Camp, National Agricultural Practice Development Leader for BDO Canada in Guelph, and for full disclosure purposes, a former field editor of Country Guide. Hi, Maggie. Welcome to Between the Rows.
Hi, Dave. Good to hear your voice again.
Good to hear from you again, too. And now, Terry, let's start with you. You're facilitating a couple of farm business management groups. What can you tell us about how and why those groups were assembled?
Yeah, Liz, it's a really interesting dynamic to watch a group form and how they do become assembled. I think you have people that are looking for a forum where they can discuss business, family, personal issues with some privacy or some confidentiality and some mutual respect and trust. And those forums are difficult to find in a local neighborhood or the typical thing here is where people say, well, it's not what you discuss at the coffee shop. And so you have farmers that are pretty progressively minded when it comes to their businesses looking for those forums of like-minded people who really want to learn from each other. So I think that's why they're assembled. How they are assembled: word of mouth, networking, casual conversations, referrals. The couple that we've formed, we have three now actually, and it started with a couple of conversations with a couple of the farmers and around the notion, and they are very much interested in that approach. And try it out, add a couple more, find a couple more people who have similar approaches, and then over a period of time, the group kind of crystallizes, gels, the relationships deepen, and you have a peer group.
Mm-hmm. Now, the members of your groups aren't necessarily all in the same size or scope or farm or even the same sector of farming necessarily, but they're not necessarily looking for that direct of a comparison either between how they're doing and how the other farmers in the group are doing, are they?
No, in these groups, they're not. But mind you, Dave, they could be. You could have a group that would be very narrowly focused. Basically, it's up to the group to determine what it is, what the approach is that they want to take. So to your point, the groups that we have are multi-sector. They're across Western Canada. They tend to come from different sizes. It's not really about the size of the farm. There are different management challenges for different sizes of farms. This is largely farmers that have a mutual interest in advancing their business practices. So, we have farms from all across Western Canada in these groups.
Mm-hmm. Now, Maggie, you're working on a benchmarking project for BDO right now, which is it's quite a bit broader in geographic scope, but also more sector specific. What can you tell us about it at this stage?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say that it's really about starting conversation and advancing business practices. Mm-hmm. We believe that being able to benchmark financial results will help farmers make better decisions. And really, at this point, most Canadian farmers are looking at yields and production numbers to make decisions. And they needed a way to tie it back to profitability. They needed a way to be able to benchmark against themselves financially, historically. And they also came down to the question, how am I doing financially compared to other farmers? and there simply was not a large enough database to make a national level conclusion around that. So a few years ago, Larry Martin and my predecessor, Jim Snyder, said we can actually solve this problem by collaborating. So Larry tested this out with 80 farms pulled from our anonymous database and proved that it worked. And then recently he did another study which looked at over 1,000 farms, wow, annual results from 2013 to 2017, and they were just grain and oilseed farmers and dairy farmers. And so that study is now, as of Friday, will be on BDO.ca, so you can access it there. Mm-hmm. So the size of the study enabled us to looked at sectors, and the numbers were nationally significant. So, you know, this is the first time that we're using real life data on such a large scale, and we're pretty excited about it here. Mm-hmm.
And of course, at this scale too, I mean, the peer group is much bigger and more anonymous, but that's also okay. You're able to offer a look at the sort of data that a farmer wouldn't necessarily make public if everyone else out there knew exactly which farm it came from. I find that whole idea just fascinating, being able to sort of draw from such a large pool of farmers that way.
Yeah, the process for accountants, being private and trust and accuracy are so important to them, and so we kind of set up a foolproof system. First of all, we had to standardize financial statements, so we separated out operational versus capital increases. So you get a clear idea of operational profitability. So in each office, that is calculated out, and then the numbers can flow directly into a template to crunch benchmarks for that individual. And then anonymously and securely, it's drawn out to do national benchmark crunching. And we're pretty excited because at that point, then we can break it down into sectors, or we can break it down into regions, and really have a look at how our clients are doing compared to that benchmark.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, the other thing that I find fascinating about this whole process, both at the local and face-to-face level, and at the again at the regional and national level, my first instinct whenever I talk to people about, you know, finances or my finances is, you know, above all else, to keep my dollars and cents to myself. Just to bring Terry back into the conversation here for a second, how much of an open book do your farmers have to be in these sorts of situations?
The more open. I'm not sure. I think I know what Maggie was saying. Not 100% sure, but I think the more open a farmer can get to in a group discussion about their finances, the more benefit they can derive from the group. Because you could talk within a group. Excuse me. You can talk within a group about management practices, but what's the balance sheet look like? What's the income statement look like? So, to get to the level of trust within a group where they're able to open up their book, so to speak, their financial statements, and show everybody, and it really makes the discussion that much more meaningful.
You'd mentioned this before in Country Guide about how those groups have this, how the groups that you're involved in have that certain level of trust. But how does it help the individual farmer and the group once that level of trust is reached?
Well, everybody's situation is different. They're all at different places in their businesses and in their, you know, in their families. And so if they feel open, or if that trust is there where they can, you know, they can ask questions that are pretty personal or may have some constructive feedback that wouldn't be 100% all positive, it can help them then make better decisions. The benchmark or the peer group never does that. It creates context for the discussions that the farm family has. And so, you know, the study that Maggie's talking about is awesome. It's going to have huge opportunities for farmers to know where they stand financially compared to others, similar sectors, similar parts of the country. Well, what do they do with that information? Well, they can take it and use it, or if they want to take it into a peer group and then use that and compare each of the farms in the peer group's financial performance, then it creates just broader context for the discussion. I don't know how else really to say it any differently. We have to get within the groups on a one-on-one farm family. Then it's just completely up to them. But as soon as you introduce other people into that discussion, then they have to feel open enough. They have to feel not threatened. They have to feel fully able to say, well, this is what we're thinking about. This isn't working well. What can we do? What comments or suggestions do others around that table, who probably have had some of the similar situations, what do they think?
Mm-hmm. Now, in private business, that seems like kind of a counterintuitive concept almost, really, you know, the whole idea of being able to sort of lay all this out there. And, you know, the first thing I would think of is that you're almost losing maybe you're losing a competitive advantage in some way by putting this information out there. But that doesn't seem to be the case for your groups, does it?
Well, no. We're sensitive to that. So the groups that we talk to, they self-define how close farmers can be to each other. They have a certain geographic separation from one farm to the other because there is some competition out there. It's just flat out fact of the business these days. Competition for business ideas, land, employees, market opportunities. So we purposely expanded the geography to kind of set that aside and make sure that there isn't any competitive issues within the group.
But still, you're
now, good. I know another group that just formed, and they're local guys, and they have no problem with that. They will have around their discussions. It'll just be a different purpose to the group. So I really want to stress that it's really up to the groups to self-determine how they want to function. What are some of their guidelines in terms of how they're organized? How do we get to the trust? Because these people, if you're a local farmer with a local group of people, everybody knows each other. If you want to expand the geographic distance or the separation from farms, likely the people aren't going to know each other. And that's going to be a little bit awkward at the first couple of meetings. But then over time, and what I mentioned earlier about the group crystallizes, those relationships form, and you could just feel in a group when they kind of cross that trust threshold, the discussions just change. We didn't, in the groups that we have, we didn't start up with opening up financial statements. It took a couple of years for that to occur.
Yeah, this is a conversation starter for us. I agree with you wholeheartedly on that, Terry, that this because they have an anonymous comparison as a benchmark, the conversations can actually start. And that's an interesting place to be.
Mm-hmm. Now, Maggie, just in the data that BDO is bringing together for this benchmarking project, you're bringing it together not only from grains and oilseeds, but also from other sectors as well. I'm trying to get a better sense of how broad we're dealing with here. Say, in grains and oilseeds from Western Canada, is there any benefit there for farmers to be seeing data also from Ontario and Quebec, and say for instance dairy farmers in the West versus the East and vice versa?
Yeah, we're doing a comparison. You need at least 300 or 400 farms data to do a good comparison statistically to get a repeatable number. That means a lot. So we can only break it down to those kind of numbers. So we're building our database as we go, of course, and we're moving ahead with it. And we will soon be able to break it down to, say, if we wanted to, look at grain and oilseed farmers in Ontario only and break that out. So it's pretty exciting because we get into the certain areas which have their own production parameters.
Mm-hmm. Now, how close is this project to going public?
Well, we are putting the report that Larry Martin wrote on our website on Friday.
Okay.
And this year, we actually was the first time during tax season that our accountants had one-on-one discussions based on the template's results. So they were actually able to do, you know, that one-on-one conversation with, this is what it looked like over the last 5 years, and break it down into, you know, cost per acre or revenues per acre. And so there were some pretty large aha moments. I don't know if you heard that in Winnipeg, but farmers were yelling aha.
I believe I did hear that, actually.
Did you? Good. We look at this as not only just an investment for our clients, but because we're generating benchmarks for Canadian agriculture, it's an investment into the whole industry.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'd like to tie this all back together with both of you. I'd like to talk a bit about tangible results, what clients have gained, what they hope to gain from these sorts of exercises. Is this sort of thing necessarily for everyone? What sort of results have they seen?
Yeah, well, because it was so interesting this year to have these conversations and get the feedback. And the biggest aha was when the farmers looked at the last 5 years of their own data and saw, you know, they could actually see the implications of their production decisions. So if at one point they, say, decided to add more an extra fungicide application, or to add more labor, or to buy a new piece of machinery, they could actually see how that impacted their bottom line, their gross margins, their contribution margins, and sort of have started a constant improvement mentality around their finances. So that was really fun to see. It also highlighted where they could save money, but also where they could generate more income from. The other aha moment, I think, came when they saw the financial benchmarks for, say, grain and oil seed farms and where they compared to those benchmarks. So it sort of made the link between the reality of their numbers and the perceptions they had about their farm and the coffee shop doc, right? So it eliminated, it creates the conversations at a little higher level and gave them some focus. So if they knew that their gross margins were weak, they could actually dig into it and, you know, really ask the question as to why this was happening, and then they can make some choices around it.
And Terry, how about your clients? What are they? What sort of tangible results are they seeing from this exercise?
You know, Dave, I don't know if I can talk to you about any specific the keyword tangible results.
Right.
The groups have been together for quite some time, and they'll only stay involved if they're seeing benefit from it. I know one. I've heard one of the farmers say that it's the best thing on their calendar is going to these peer group meetings. These are busy people, typically. The people that are going to derive the most benefit out of the benchmarking study, out of participating in peer groups, are busy people. So for them, time is really valuable. And they choose to spend their time looking at benchmarking information, talking to their accountant about their business, or taking it maybe one step further and having that discussion within a peer group type forum. Then they're going to do it because they see value coming back to the farm. I think that pretty much sums it up. Tangible benefits, I don't know. It'll be specific to each farm because, as I said, they're all at different places. It's all the same industry, but they're all have different things going on, you know, in their families, in their businesses. So it's really invigorating to listen to a group of farmers that are kind of a like-minded approach to management, talk about their businesses really openly and candidly. Just fascinating to watch the discussion and hear the questions and the comments. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if that's a very good answer to your question, Dave.
Oh, no worries. That's what I was looking for. And just to wrap this up now, as far as farmers getting involved in both of these projects, who would they contact, and how would they get involved?
You want to go first, well, maybe?
Fire away.
Sure. For video, they can just go into their local office and ask for it. It's as easy as that. There's like 165 offices across Canada. Find one or give us a call, and we'll make sure that you can do this. You don't necessarily have to be a client, but you should be to make it easy. And that's a segue into that, I guess, is anybody can crunch their gross margins if they want to. But if you want a good comparison, we have the data for that. I think you asked me if it was necessary, and the more I think about it, the more I think, yeah, if you're making any decisions about debt or buying things, if you're making decisions about improvements, if you're concerned and having stress about your choices, having the dollars, an actual dollar amount to help you make those decisions can really make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. And Terry, how do people get in touch with you, to see about getting in on one of these groups?
Well, they can reach me by through the email, through our website. There's a portal there. They can call me on my cell phone. We're forming groups. We have another group that's being formed. We're actually trying to form a group in Atlantic Canada. So our idea is to build out more of these groups. It's just as simple as giving us a call. Two or three meetings a year is typically how we organize them. They don't have to be Backswath clients per se, you know, so there's farmers that are in our peer groups that the only time we ever see them is when they come to a peer group. And if anybody, my suggestion is if anybody has, and I might like to think about that, they should give me a call, as I'll put them in touch with farmers that are in groups, so they can talk to other farmers and not just rely on what they're hearing from me or others who are strong proponents of it. Better for them to talk to farmers and say, well, this is why they're in the group and this is why they continue to make that investment.
Okay. And we look forward to hearing more about these groups and the benchmarking project through BDO as time goes on. Terry Boettcher and Maggie Van Camp, thank you both very much for your time and for coming on Between the Rows. Terry Boettcher is the CEO of Backswath Management. Contact him at terry.boettcher@backswath.com. Maggie Van Camp is with BDO Canada. Contact her at mvancamp@bdo.ca. Now, before and after their seeding window opened up, trade issues have been the top of mind for Canadian farmers lately, and on a day-to-day basis, it's hard to know whether any progress is being made. However, when Mike Rain of the Western Producers sat down recently with Federal Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland, she said Canadian politeness and persistence do pay off. Mike caught up to the minister at the Evraz plant in Regina. Here's their conversation.
Welcome to Regina. I'm Mike Rain with the Western Producer. We're here talking to Chrystia Freeland and our Minister of Foreign Affairs. Now, we're dressed in orange today, not because we're in jail, but because we're here at their Everest facility, to steel facility. And we're talking about how the 232 tariffs have come off and potentially a step towards NAFTA. But there's some larger trade issues at work, and we'd like to also get into that. So first off, what's happened with steel? Because I know our readers at the Western Producer and our viewers at home are looking at farm equipment. Prices are up again, and there are steel surcharges in place. So what's happening with steel?
Well, as you know, Mike, we have really good news on steel. As the Prime Minister announced on Friday, we reached a deal with our American partners to lift the tariffs. So the Americans lifted the 232 tariffs on Canadian steel and aluminum. And we, at the very same moment, lifted our retaliatory tariffs that were on steel and some other products too. It is a great story. To me, it's really proof that if the facts are on your side, and if you're united and you're persistent, you can succeed. And I think that was, you know, what our whole country managed to do in this situation. And I do want to emphasize, I'm glad that you spoke about the impact on Canadian farmers, because of course it's had an impact on U.S. farmers too.
Oh, yes.
And I think the thing about this mutual lifting of the tariffs, the key point is, it's a true win-win. It's good for Canadians, it's good for Americans. It's the right thing.
Okay. Now, the Americans have some other trade issues outside of, settling some North American tariff problems. They've been encountering the Chinese in a way that's parallel to what's happening in Canada. And we're finding that the Chinese are taking a less than warm view of importing some of our products, including canola. So that's a big issue for Western Canadian farmers. And the Chinese have a couple of Canadians, the Michaels, are there right now, and that's possibly making things more complex. Now, I guess that's trade policy, and this is your job. When we look at Sabrina Meng's role in this, this is politics. This isn't trade. At least that's the position we've taken on it. Is that the case? What are you feeling in this?
Look, you've laid out the situation very well, Mike. And the reality is, it's complicated and it's difficult. When it comes to the U.S., as I'm foreign minister, but the prime minister gave me special responsibility for the Canada-U.S. trading relationship. So I'm responsible for the trade side as well. But in the rest of the world, it's my wonderful colleague, Jim Carr of Manitoba. And on agricultural issues, obviously also Marie-Claude Bibeau, our Minister of Agriculture. Having said that, you're right that this is a very difficult moment in our relationship with China. And it's difficult in ways that touch a lot of different people. I do want to start with where I think we should all start, which is the very real human side of things. You mentioned the two Michaels, and it is very sadly true that Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor, two great Canadian guys, have been arbitrarily detained in China in difficult conditions. And I think it is really important for them to know, and we let them know this on consular visits, for their families to know, and for Canadians to know, that we, the government, is not forgetting them for one moment. In really every meeting I have with ministers from other countries, when I was in the States last Wednesday, focused on 232, right? That was an important day. It actually turned out to be the day we essentially did the deal. But I made a point of raising the cases of Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor with Ambassador Lighthizer, with Senator Grassley, because it's important for the world to know and for them to know that, you know, their detentions are arbitrary, it is not right, and they have to be released. So I do really want to start there. And I also just want to say to their families just how much I admire both Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor. They're very brave, they're showing real resilience, and their families are remarkable. On the other issues, you mentioned canola. And, you know, look, I was saying to you earlier that the Western producer is a fixture in the house I grew up in, the house my dad still lives in, because my dad's a farmer. And, you know, like most farmers in the prairies, my dad grows a lot of canola. I have spent quite a bit of time swathing canola. That was the particular job I got, and in those days we didn't have a cab on the swather, so I was able to get a suntan at the same time.
It works.
It's good. It's,
yeah.
So, you know, I really do understand the importance of canola to the Canadian economy, especially to the prairie economy, and I think we should be really proud. You know, canola is a Canadian invention. It's a real example of the innovation of our economy. We are very clear that the phytosanitary issues being cited are not a concern. We are absolutely confident in the health and safety of Canadian canola. I cook with canola oil every day. And, you know, I do want our farmers to know we stand up for our canola. And I want Canadian consumers to know Canadian canola is not only safe, it is very, very healthy. Healthier than other oils, in my personal view, in fact. We are, when it comes to this situation with China, we are working through it. It's important to go through all the steps, and we're doing that. Minister Carr's officials have also raised the issue at the WTO, which is important to do. I think, you know, we started off talking about steel and aluminum, and I think some of the lessons from the approach in that situation can be applied, and I certainly am applying them in how we deal with this difficult moment in our relationship with China. I think it's important to take a fact-based approach. With steel and aluminum, we knew the facts were on our side. With canola, we know the facts are on our side. It's important, and I think this is the Canadian way, to be clear, to be polite, but also to be firm and resolute. With the 232 steel and aluminum tariffs, we really knew the facts were on our side, and the win-win outcome was for those tariffs to be lifted by both Canada and the US. I have the same confidence when it comes to canola, because at the end of the day, we think about this as Canadians, and we know how important that market is to us. But I think it's also important to remember Canada is overwhelmingly the leading canola exporter in the world, and China benefits from buying our canola. China benefits from the great healthy oil that they can make using our canola. China benefits from the feed that can be made using canola meal. So this, the final outcome, I really believe, is a win-win. And we just have to have both firmness and patience. And I'm confident that we're going to get there.
Now, your parliamentary secretary, Rob Olafson, is leading a parliamentary committee. They're on the ground in Shanghai and Nanjing and Hong Kong, Macau, right now. I think farmers have been looking for some information about what's going on, what looks like boots on the ground, what sounds like something, and it's difficult with international trade to say, you know, we can't have daily updates on the negotiations. But now beyond that, your counterpart, Minister Yi, hasn't been available to you to discuss the current situation with what's going on both the human side and on the trade side. You feel like there's any movement there?
So first of all, you're quite right that Rob Oliphant and a group of Canadian MPs are in China right now. Rob is just freshly appointed as my parliamentary secretary, and I think it's a good thing that he's there, that he's able to speak directly with the Chinese. Also, of course, China has a team of diplomats in Canada, and we have a strong diplomatic presence in China. And so conversations are happening at those levels. What we have learned, we've also been spending a lot of time marshalling an international coalition of countries that are speaking out specifically on behalf of the arbitrarily detained Canadians. And they have been speaking out publicly, which is a really big deal. This is the first time that I have been able to come across where there has been such a large group of countries speaking out when it comes to Chinese detentions. So I see that as very positive. And also, we've been asking our partners around the world to raise this issue directly with the Chinese, and we know that they have been doing that. You know, for example, at the most recent meeting of senior officials between the US and China, at the direct request of the Prime Minister to the President, the detention of the two Canadians was raised. One of the other things that we've been doing, Mike, is talking to other countries about their experiences And we have found that, and you know, this is probably not so familiar to Canadians because we naturally think about the world from our own perspective. But what we've been finding is the situation that Canada finds itself in right now with regards to China is not novel or unique. And there are a number of other countries that have found themselves in a similar situation. Norway, Japan, a comparable yep. situation. Norway, Japan, South Korea, Singapore, Australia. And we've had some detailed conversations with really all the countries that have found themselves in situations like this. And there does seem to be a pattern of the way China conducts itself in these situations. So, you know, that's why I say it's important for us to be resolute, to be firm, to be clear where we know the facts are on our side, and also to be patient and persistent. And, you know, that can be hard, but I think that our country as a whole demonstrated those qualities in the 232 issue, and we ultimately got to a win-win. And so that's why I think we just need to keep on going in a similar vein in this situation. But I do want to say, you know, I am extremely sympathetic to the Canadian farmers who are frustrated by this situation. You know, there's one Canadian farmer in particular who I hear from about this on a very regular basis.
I was
going to
ask you, so is he growing canola this
year? On a very regular basis, and my dad's neighbors feel that he can also be deputized to share their sentiments also. So I really get it. And, you know, I really do also want to assure Canadian farmers, in particular the Western producers who you and your publication serve so well, that the government is very, very focused on this. I'm in Regina, so I want to offer a shout out to a really fabulous colleague, Ralph Goodale, who is a fantastic, extremely experienced and extremely wise MP and minister and colleague and friend. And everyone in Saskatchewan and the prairies can rest assured that Ralph is very seized of this issue. And when Ralph is jumping up and down about something, all of us, starting with the Prime Minister, really pay attention.
You've just been listening to Mike Rain of the Western Producers speaking with Federal Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland. Now, trade, of course, looms large, but weather, both on the prairies and in the U.S. Plains and Midwest, has been looming large over the charts also. To shed some light on that, we've got Phil Franz-Workington here from Glacier Markets Farm. Phil, hi, and welcome back to Between the Rows.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. Now, the of course, weather has been generally supportive for grain and oilseed markets lately. What can you tell us starting here on the prairies?
Yeah, in the prairies, it's dry in a big sections of Saskatchewan and Alberta, and that's propping up our prices to some extent. But the bigger weather, and there's still time to get some moisture there, but that's definitely something we got our eyes on. The bigger weather story right now is the U.S. Midwest. They're getting a lot of rain and more in the forecasts, and you know, there's been flooding on the news and tornadoes and all that, and it's slowed spring seeding there. So only about a third of the soybean crop and maybe two-thirds of the corn has been seeded so far. Usually corn would be just about wrapping up at this point, while soybeans would be well over half done. So the delays there, we've seen U.S. Grains and oilseeds shoot up the past few days. And the canola market, the Canadian canola market's mainly along for the ride there.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was of course a trade package, a farm aid package announced last week in the for U.S. producers. Is that going to have any bearing on how much planting actually goes ahead? Looking beyond the weather picture.
Yeah. Well, as best as I can tell, their program there, it the payouts are dependent on what is actually seeded, so that will be some incentive to seed, but you know, kind of the details were sort of thin when the reports came out on that, and the extent of the impact on the market remains to be seen, but yeah, it could alter some acres in to some extent, but that remains to be seen. And the bigger thing right now is just actually being able to get on the fields to seed something.
Mm-hmm. Looking back here in Canada, of course, there was a report that recently came out from Ag Canada regarding old crop canola supplies and expectations for ending stocks for the current crop year. What can you tell us about that and how it's going to affect the market picture going forward?
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, you know, there's weather problems now hurting the, you know, crop prospects for this year. But there's the ongoing China trade dispute that Canada is in and is limiting exports. So there's a big backlog of old crop canola out there that's just overhanging things. Ag Canada estimated there'll be a carryout around 3.5 million tons for, you know, as of this upcoming July, and that dwarfs any previous record. They're predicting for by July 2019, 5.3 million tons of canola will be carryout, and that's you know, even 2 million tons above the current record that they're already looking at. So that's a big chunk of you know, canola that is going to need to find a home somewhere, and limits the need for any end users to bid up the market.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, of course, I'd be remiss if we didn't discuss briefly the China trade issues, both here and in the States. How's that? How much is that affecting the charts that we're looking at right now?
Yeah, it's I guess it's kind of that ongoing bearish underlying influence that you know, every once in a while there'll be you know, a tweet or some kind of news out of the States that gets everyone excited, and then nothing happens, and then you know, kind of the cycle continues there. The U.S. seems closer to a deal than Canada. Canada is kind of no real developments, really. The you know, there are talk of trade delegations and this and that, but there's been no real concrete movement for some time. So the eventually something will have to give, but what that is and when is still a bit of a mystery, and a frustration as well for the canola sector.
Mm-hmm. So I guess we'll just have, for the most part, I guess it's continuing to wait for developments coming out of the next round of 5 a.m. tweets. Phil Franz-Workington from Glacier Markets Farm, thanks very much for your time, and thanks for being on Between the Rows.
Thanks for having me.
Phil Franz-Workington is with Glacier Markets Farm here in Winnipeg. That's all the time we have for this week, but we'll be back next week with more from the Glacier Farm Media family of publications. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to etr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.